Yule pulled back on the cocking knob. The action stuck for a second, then came free, ejecting an unfired 9mm cartridge that skittered across the floor. He detached the staggered row stick mag from the butt of the grip and did a round count. Including the ejected bullet, there were 29 Parabellum bullets left in the clip. He unloaded the mag, wiping down and checking each round for corrosion. Before he slapped the reloaded clip back in place, he locked the action open and looked down the barrel. In the torchlight, he could see pits, but no obstructions or cracks. He dry-fired the Uzi, and the pins snapped crisply.
Shit!
The sound startled the man on Tolliver's left, making his narrow shoulders jerk. Wiljay was still in his teens, tall, gangly, with a skanky mop of brown dreadlocks. From his expression, he was on the verge of bawling for his mother, something that Tolliver and Dunbar, preoccupied with their own self-pity, failed to notice. The Dimmy trio had been part of a convoy that had tried to cross the Great Desert from the south. Tried and failed. One after another, their wags had broken down. And when the last wag gave up the ghost, they'd abandoned their possessions and started walking. 2 dozen of them. In a few days, the food ran out, then the water. After that, the heat quickly took its toll. Tolliver, Dunbar, and Wiljay, the convoy's sole survivors, thought they'd found the promised land when they'd accidentally stumbled onto the canyon. As had Ewald Starr when he showed up 2 days later, fresh from his own ordeal to the northwest. Ever the wolf among sheep, Ewald had wide experience in scheming and backstabbing, and in murder for profit. In this case, the sheep wore ankle-length, homespun robes the color of scorched porridge. From the moment he saw the triple-stoop grins of the canyon's permanent residents, he figured he'd own the place in a couple of weeks tops. All he needed was a few like-minded individuals to help with the initial round of wet work. Once he had things well in hand, he'd make sex slaves of the suitable women and men, and field slaves of the rest. All hail Baron Ewald Starr. Caught up in the potential of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, there was no denying he had let his guard slip. Not that his customary vigilance would have guaranteed a different outcome. Pilgrim Plavik and his flock kept their plans well concealed. Ewald had seen no weapons other than hoes and shovels until that morning. Rudely awakened by his hosts, he stared into their masked gun barrels and was relieved of his own. Escape was impossible. When they marched him outside into the street, he saw that the other three travelers had been likewise overwhelmed and disarmed. Protests and demands for an explanation fell on deaf ears. The entire ville turned out for the procession, men, women, children, all grinning and chanting nonsense while the pilgrim himself led the way to the top of the dam. With blaster muzzles pressed to their heads, Ewald and the others had been forced through an open manhole and onto a series of rungs set in the wall, rungs leading down into impenetrable gloom. As they clung there for dear life, lit torches were tossed in, then the manhole cover slid shut, and the light from above went out. Honored guests had become prisoners in a vast concrete dungeon. And the bad news was just beginning. The man or woman whose bones littered the corridor had fired just one shot in self-defense, a single shot from a machine pistol capable of firing 600 rounds a minute before being almost cut in two.
Whatever chilled that one, it was something triple mean.
Something muty.
Ewald Starr knew all about muties. Over the years, he'd slaughtered the two-legged homicidal freaks in face-to-face battle, in ambush, as a mercy, as a sec man. And whenever ammo was plentiful, he'd hunted them for sport. Stickies, scalies, cannies, stumpies. Nuke Day's genetic horror show were no match for a functioning Uzi in the hands of a professional chiller.
We're gonna die in here. We're all gonna die.
Before the teenager Wiljay's panic could contaminate the other two, Ewald racked around.
Dead bastard couldn't shoot straight.
Weapon ready to rip, he glared at the boy. Wiljay caught his meaning and shut up quick, a decision that saved his life.
But what are we going to do, Ewald? How are we going to get out of here?
It's simple, Tolliver. We work our way down to the bottom of the dam. There should be an opening on the spillway side.
And if there isn't?
Then we'll nuke and make one. Follow me, and make sure you all stay close.
Ewald didn't want tight ranks because he gave a rad blast about their safety. The way he saw it, the more baitfish there were in a school, the better the odds of being the one that didn't get eaten. Halfway along the gritty, weeping hallway, he found the door to a stairwell. When he opened it, the stench drove them back on their heels. Tolliver clapped a hand over his nose and mouth.
Ah, nuke shit!
More dead ends down there. Stairs could be some kind of trap.
Yeah, Dunbar, but it's the fastest way out of here. Maybe the only way out of here. You got a better idea? Maybe you want to spend some time exploring the nooks and crannies of this place?
Dunbar shook his head so hard his belly flap trembled. They all shook their heads.
Then let's do it.
With Yuld on point, they carefully descended the stairs in close formation. The light from their torches didn't penetrate far, and with every step, the odor of death grew more intense.
Shut it, Wiljay.
Two floors down, they discovered its source. On the concrete landing lay the eroded remains of several corpses, their burned-out torches, and a pool of yellow bile. Tolliver scooped up a sawed-off double-barreled shotgun that had either been dropped or thrown clear of the puddle. When he broke open the 12-gauge, its ejectors flipped out empty plastic holes. Ewald had already figured as much. On the facing wall were two foot-wide buckshot blast craters. One stood at belly height, the other was 10 feet above it. There was no blood splatter in or around either of the craters. The shotgunner had missed twice, at point-blank range. Ewald guessed that either the second shot had been fired wild in the air, or the intended target was clinging to the wall up there. Stickies had suckers on their palms and feet. They liked to drop on unsuspecting victims. That didn't explain the sword slice. Stickies didn't use weapons as a rule, preferring to tear their prey apart with their bare hands. Nor did it explain the goo. A quick survey of the landing turned up a pair of black powder revolvers submerged among the jumble of human bones. The Italian-made Civil War replicas were useless. Their loaded cylinders had reacted with the fluid, turning into crumbling masses of corrosion. There was no ammo for the scattergun, but Tolliver hung on to it anyway. A club was better than no weapon at all. On the steps below, their torches revealed still more bodies. These stripped skeletons lay on their stomachs. They'd die trying to crawl up the stairs without legs.
What was that?
Shut up and listen.
But there was only silence. After a few moments, Dunbar spoke up.
Could just be a busted ventilation fan down there somewhere. A breeze might be turning the blades and making them hit something.
The hairs on the back of Ewald's neck stood upright. It wasn't a sticky, and it wasn't a busted vent fan either, because the sounds were getting louder by the second. Whatever it was coming at them. And fast. At his feet lay incontrovertible proof that the stairwell was a piss-poor place to make a stand.
Run!
Ewald turned and vaulted back to the landing. He hit the exit door and the others followed, sprinting for their lives down the pitch-dark service hallway. Over the slap of boot soles on concrete, Ewald strained to hear the stairwell door banging open behind them. The bang didn't come. Ewald stopped around a bend in the corridor and waited there for the others to catch up. If it hadn't been for the smell, he might have missed seeing the breach in the opposite wall. Yellow fluid seeped from the bottom of a gash in the concrete, 3 feet high and 3 feet wide at the middle.
What blazes have you got there?
Ewald couldn't hazard a guess. As Dunbar joined them, puffing hard, his face in folds of fat glazed with sweat, Ewald approached the opening from the side, this to avoid tracking through the puddle on the floor. He bent close with a torch. For as far as he could see, which was only 5 or 6 feet into the gash, yellow slime greased the walls. He used the butt of the torch to carefully poke at the sides of the hole. The edge of the concrete was soft, mushy even. Under pressure, it oozed like paste.
What the fuck?
He'd never seen or heard of anything like it. Suddenly, a gust of air blasted from the opening. The concussive force blew out his torch and turned the yellow fluid into mist. Ewald felt the wetness on his fingers a split second before the pain hit. Galvanic pain, head to toe, like he thrust his arm into a cauldron of boiling water. The burrow was a tight fit. The smooth pebble clicked against Ryan's teeth as he shifted it from one cheek to the other. The steady rasp of his breathing matched the scrape of his boot soles on the desert hardpan. He moved in an almost effortless, economical glide, the stride of a man used to walking long distances over broken terrain. Overhead, the pale violet sky was cloudless, the last visible stars rapidly fading. On the horizon to his left hung an orange half-disk of sun. A dawn wind shrieked across the ancient plain in buffeting gusts that peppered his face with grit. It was already hot, soon to get hotter. For the third night in a row, he and his companions had marched, dusk until dawn, by the light of the moon. Not their standard operating procedure by any means. Under more normal circumstances, they would have stopped in a likely spot well before sunset, set up a defensive perimeter and a guard rotation, and then hunkered down with their weapons close to hand until daybreak. Travel in Deathlands was always dangerous, but the nights were the worst time to be on the move. That's when the big predators came out, the solo chillers and the pack hunters, human and otherwise. In this case, because of the heat, the distance they had to cross, and their limited supply of water, they had to take the risk. No predators had shown themselves so far, which led Ryan to conclude that there weren't any. To survive and breed, predators needed a dependable supply of victims. There was nothing in this hell-blasted landscape for large carnivores to hunt. The up-tilted plain of beige gullies and boulder outcrops seemed to go on forever, to the curve of the world and beyond. There was no sign of a sizable body of water ahead. No great crack in the earth, either. As the sun broke free of the horizon, it was like the door of a blast furnace swinging open. In seconds, the air temperature jumped 20 degrees. Ryan glanced over his shoulder. Behind him, Doc, JB, Mildred, Christy, and Jack still appeared in good shape. Their emergency food had run out the previous day. They had shared the last tepid sips from their canteens hours ago. Like Ryan, they were all sucking on small stones to quiet their thirsts. The companions were a battle-hardened crew, but even they had their limits. As the morning's heat increased, to conserve their strength and bodily fluids, the rest stops had to come more frequently.
Let's stop a minute.
The one-eyed man waved the others down behind the shelter of a big boulder. Christy, Mildred, Doc, and Dix sat with their backs pressed against the base of the rock, in the lee of the wind, out of the sun for the moment. Soon they would have to stop for the day. If they couldn't find permanent shade, they'd have to create it. Jack didn't sit down and rest with the others. He paused only long enough to nod at Ryan before he loped away, his lank white hair flying around his shoulders. He continued in the same direction they were headed, doing a wreck. Ryan had known the albino youth for a very long time, but seeing him run like that after a brutal all-night march still brought a smile to his lips. Jack was the hardest of the hard, a true wild child of the hellscape.
How far do you think we've come?
Plenty far enough, if you ask me. We should be able to see it by now.
Maybe, maybe not. This end of the canyon looked damn narrow on the map. The way the ground is tipped up, we might not see it until we're right on top of it.
But we've got to be close. We've got to be.
I find it distinctly odd that there is nothing green before us. Odd and foreboding.
It was an absence they'd all noticed. Water in the desert meant an oasis. Densely clustered weeds, shrubs, trees taking advantage of the scarce resource. A green stripe cutting through the panorama of sun-blasted beige. A green stripe that wasn't there. They sat in silence in the shade, sucking on their pebbles, regathering their strength, asking themselves the same questions. How much farther could they go without water? How many more days could they last? How badly would it hurt when the end came? When Jack returned from the wreck, his blood-red eyes revealed no joy, no sadness, nothing.
Well, Jack?
Canyon ahead, quarter mile.
Good work. Let's go, then.
Ryan rose to his feet. Jack caught his arm.
No water.
A two-word death sentence.
What do you mean, no water?
Come look, Mildred.
After they had advanced another 100 yards, the edge of the canyon came into view. A dark line across the ground that grew broader as they approached. It was the far wall of the fissure dropping away sheer. To the southeast, for as far as they could see, An ever-widening gash divided the hammered plain. When they reached the canyon's near rim, they looked down a 100-foot drop.
Rad blast!
There was no reservoir, no river flowing at the canyon bottom, no plants. As Jack had said, no water.